John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Wednesday, July the 13th, 2011. $2,500 Jewish Americans and Canadians are expected to immigrate to Israel this summer of 2011. The immigrants will be residing in areas with a largely Palestinian population as part of an initiative to change the demographics of these areas. Applicants for the program may qualify for up to $9,000 in financial assistance, as well as $4,000 for a vehicle subsidy. The immigrants will be settling in northern parts of Israel, in the Golan Heights, Lower and Upper Galilee, the Jezreel Valley, and the Upper Jordan Valley. The Go North initiative received a $10 million donation from the Russell Berry Foundation, the Jewish National Fund, and other programs designed to aid newly arrived Aliyah immigrants. As the Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas welcomed the Greek President Karolos Papoulias in the central West Bank city of Ramallah, dozens of Palestinians protested against the visit to express rejection to the Greek authorities' decision that prevented the Freedom Flotilla 2 from sailing to Gaza via Greek ports. Papoulias first visited Tel Aviv before heading to Ramallah in an official visit to President Abbas. He received an official welcome ceremony. The Israeli army has decided to expropriate large areas of Palestinian land in the Bethlehem district in order to expand the Efrat illegal settlement, which is built on lands illegally annexed from residents of Al-Khara district, south of Bethlehem. Palestinian medical sources reported that a college student was shot and killed on Wednesday at dawn by Israeli military fire in Al-Fara refugee camp north of the northern West Bank city of Nablus. Several residents were abducted. The sources identified the slain youth as Ibrahim Sarhan, a student of Al-Najah University in Nablus. Eyewitnesses reported that at least 11 armoured Israeli vehicles invaded the refugee camp at approximately 3 a.m., broke into and searched several homes, causing damages. The eyewitnesses added that as Sahan was walking towards the camp's mosque to perform dawn prayers, soldiers opened fire at him, hitting the major artery in his thigh. Seeking help, the youth then tried to drag himself into a nearby home, but the soldiers grabbed him, dragged him on the ground before leaving him to bleed to death by preventing local medics from approaching him. On Wednesday at dawn, the Israeli Air Force carried out two airstrikes targeting a blacksmith's workshop in Gaza City, leading to extensive damage and one injury. The workshop was destroyed and several nearby homes sustained damages, while the main water line in the neighbourhood was shattered. The Palestinian Authority has slammed the role of the US in Middle East peace talks in a statement on Monday. In a press release following a PA meeting to discuss the Middle East Quartet meeting, Palestinian leaders laid the blame for Israeli policies on US Barack Obama's administration's door. The statement described Israeli policies as racist and expansionary. Both soft and hard-line US-Israeli supporters have come out against the new Israeli boycott law that came into effect on Monday when it gained a majority vote in the Knesset. Groups have described the bill, which makes illegal the boycotting of Israeli goods, including goods made in the settlements, as undemocratic and undermining freedom of speech. Unusually, hardline Zionist groups in America, such as the Zionist Organization of America and the Anti-Defamation League, have joined left-wing groups such as Americans for Peace Now and J Street in criticizing Israeli government policy. Senior Hamas official Musa Abu Marzouk, speaking to the Palestinian daily Al-Falastin, has reiterated the party position that Hamas will not support Salam Fayyad continuing in his president position as prime minister in an interim unity government. That rounds up today's new news. Please join us again tomorrow for a summary of important events in the Palestinian territories and elsewhere. You have been listening to Palestine Today from the International Middle East Media Centre. For more updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hossam Qassis and me, David Steele.
On the 2nd of July, Code Pink ended a five-day vigil in front of the Greek embassy demanding that the ships of the Free Gaza Flotilla be permitted to leave harbor without interference. On that day, the 2nd of July, the captain of the U.S. boat to Gaza, the Audacity of Hope, a ship which had been forced back to port the previous day, was arrested to face a kangaroo trial the next day, according to some reports. Here is an interview with one of the participants in the vigil in front of the Greek embassy in Washington, D.C. What just happened at the Greek embassy?
Well, we had a five-day vigil here to pressure the Greek government to allow the Gaza Freedom Flotilla to carry on, especially the U.S. boat to Gaza. Yesterday, the U.S. boat to Gaza left port because they had all their papers in order. They got 20 minutes out to sea, about a mile, and they were stopped by the commandos.
Here's audio from the confrontation between the Greek Coast Guard and the captain of the Audacity of Hope as the captain tries to negotiate for safe passage. With all that talk of papers in order, it sounds like he had to deal with the Gestapo.
Our paperwork is in order. We've been inspected. We've had surveyors. This is seaworthy. There's no problem.
They told me you have made observations. You are not seaworthy.
They can call, Delaware and talk to the officials there that this is documented in Delaware. The paperwork is in order.
You have to follow the law.
I am following the law. My paperwork's in order.
You are not able to travel. Same with the ship. Tomorrow, they will check you will be okay as you are saying.
The boat was and is fine. All that talk of unseaworthy is nothing but a bunch of excuses that come straight from Israel. Now here's the rest of the interview.
They were turned back to port. They're now at a police dock. They're being confined. As a matter of fact, this morning Omar Barghouti showed up, or this afternoon, and he wanted to get on the boat, and they're not allowing anybody on the boat or anybody off the boat. If you leave the boat, you leave the boat.
I heard the captain was arrested.
Yes, the captain was arrested, and apparently there's going to be a trial possibly tomorrow.
That's awful quick for a trial.
Yeah, I don't know how that can happen, but that's some people have been reporting that. I can't verify it, but people from the Greece have tweeted it. So today at 9:45 a.m., we ended our vigil here, and we're going to do some washable chalk drawings in front of the Greece embassy and wait for instructions. What to do and where to go from here. But as of this point, the Greek embassy in Washington, D.C. put out a release that there no boats will be leaving on this Gaza Freedom Flotilla.
In other words, the Gaza Freedom Flotilla, which was bound to break the siege of Gaza, now find that they themselves are under siege by Israel's stooges in occupied Greece. Baghdad, Iraq, Sunday. Yet another U.S. soldier was killed in Iraq, this time in Amara. This was the latest in a string of attacks that have killed at least 18 U.S. soldiers this summer in Iraq. Afghanistan, today. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from an insurgent attack. Afghanistan, yesterday. NATO is reporting the death of another soldier of unspecified nationality from an IED blast in an undisclosed location in southern Afghanistan. Afghanistan, Saturday and Sunday. NATO is reporting the deaths of three soldiers of unspecified nationality from insurgent attacks. Afghanistan, Sunday. The Danish military is reporting the death of a Danish soldier from an IED blast in an area west of patrol base line in the Upper Gurisk Valley, Helmand Province. Denmark has announced that they will withdraw from Afghanistan this year. One country at a time, the coalition is being whittled down, just like in Iraq. Afghanistan, Monday. NATO is reporting the death of a soldier of unspecified nationality from a non-combat related injury somewhere in eastern Afghanistan. Is this yet another GI suicide? Afghanistan, Tuesday morning. Afghan President Hamid Karzai's half-brother, a man the Washington Post said was evolving into a real U.S. ally, was assassinated at his home in southern Afghanistan, an official reported. Sardar Mohammed, reportedly a member of Ahmad Walid Karzai's own security team, killed him with an AK-47, according to a person who witnessed the killing. Yet the Washington Post reports three pistol shots were used instead, consistent with the report that one weapon was turned over to guards and a second, concealed weapon was used. The Taliban took credit for the execution, but some say he was killed for being a liability to the current government instead. He was an old-school warlord and strongman with a long list of enemies. Afghanistan, today, a bomb exploded against the motorcade of an Afghan governor on Wednesday as he made his way to the funeral of President Hamid Karzai's brother. The attack wounded two Afghan troops, the government reported. The governor was en route to join thousands of mourners in the Kandahar province. The governor of Helmand province, Gulab Mongol, and the provincial chief of intelligence were unhurt in the attack. The bomb was detonated by remote control, wounding two nearby soldiers, according to the governor's office. Pakistan, Tuesday. U.S. drone strikes continue to kill people, even as Pakistani-U.S. relations reach their lowest point in many years. At least 45 people were killed by missiles launched by U.S. drone aircraft in Pakistan's northwest in less than 24 hours, local intelligence officials reported on Tuesday. Baghdad, Iraq, today. Three Katyusha rockets hit the U.S. Embassy in West Baghdad's fortified green zone on Tuesday, according to a security source reporting to Oswald El Iraq News Agency. Baghdad, Iraq, Monday. Three Katyusha rockets scored direct hits on and in the green zone, wounding a member of the Iraqi parliament and her sons. Quote, one of Al-Fadhila Virtue Party's legislators, Camila Al-Musawi's sons, was injured and a number of her guards when they tried to save her and her family members when their flat was the target for a three Katyusha rocket attack targeted against the Green Zone early on Monday, her office statement reported. Baghdad, Iraq, Monday. Six rockets were fired into the fortified Green Zone in Baghdad, reported state-run Iraqi television. It added that the rockets had been launched from a neighborhood south of the Iraqi capital. The attack caused no casualties, according to the report. Was this a second rocket attack, in addition to the one that wounded an Iraqi legislator? Baghdad, Iraq, Monday. Two elements of the pro-U.S. Al-Sawa, or Awakening militias, have been killed, and four others were injured in a booby-trap car explosion in West Baghdad's Abu Ghraib district on Monday, according to a Baghdad security force. Misawa or Awakening fighters or former resistance fighters who turned coats to side with the U.S. in 2007 and are regarded as traitors by nearly all current insurgent elements. Kut, Iraq, Monday night. A U.S. Army patrol near Delta Base was attacked using an explosive charge in the city of Kut, the center of southern Iraq's Wasit province on Monday night, but losses were not known, an Iraqi police source reported. Wait a minute! What U.S. patrol? What IED? I thought U.S. combat operations in Iraq were over! Oh yeah, that's been said before. Mission accomplished? I don't think so. Mr. Barack Obama, now is the time to pull the plug on 8 and 10 years of useless war. Bring all the troops home today.
As pro-democracy protests roiled the Arab world earlier this year, the United States and Saudi Arabia engaged in a tense rivalry over how to respond. The Obama administration pushed for political reforms, while the Saudis have urged leaders, especially the monarchies in the Persian Gulf, to repress the protests. All during the Arab Spring, top U.S. diplomats visited Jordanian King Abdullah II on a weekly basis to push for democratic reforms as the antidote to growing public protests. Meanwhile, Saudi Arabia was urging the king to hold on to his monarchy. The Saudi government also delivered $400 million in aid to the embattled Jordanian king. According to the Los Angeles Times, in May, the Saudis proposed allowing Jordan into the Gulf Cooperation Council to stimulate new investment and jobs. Saudi leaders were reported to be very upset when President Obama, after weeks of equivocation, finally called for Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak to resign. The Saudis also sent troops to Bahrain to counter pro-democracy activists.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 90.5 FM from Washington, D.C. If you can hear this signal and you like what you hear, send an email to WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. Repeat, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On the 11th of July, protesters gathered in front of the White House, demanding that a proposed free trade area with Colombia be scrapped instead of being introduced to Congress, as Obama is proposing to do in violation of his campaign promises. The human rights situation in Colombia is abominable, with 51 trade unionists murdered by paramilitaries last year and 17 more murdered by paramilitaries this year. The protesters carried 51 coffins, symbolizing all the trade unionists murdered last year in Colombia, and emphasizing why this free trade area should not be approved under any circumstances. 4 people were arrested after the coffins were dropped on the street in front of the White House.
We are appealing to the president today to stand on what he said and write. That there would not be a Colombia free trade agreement until these human rights...
Yo vengo en representación del sindicato Ciudad Trainal, represento los trabajadores tercerizados en Colombia, especialmente los porteros de caña y el Valle del Cauca, a los afrodescendientes, a la etnia indígena, todos los que nos vamos a ver perjudicados si se firma el Tratado de Libre Comercio con Estados Unidos.
Good afternoon. My name is Juan Cambingo. I am the president of the Pradera sectional of Sinal Trainal. I am here representing outsourced workers, specifically the sugarcane outsourced workers in the Valle de Cauca. I'm also representing Afro-Colombians and indigenous people, all of us who are going to be very severely affected by the passing of this FTA.
Creemos que si firmamos el Tratado de Libre Comercio es condenarnos a muerte a los afrodescendientes, los trabajadores que hoy estamos tercerizados en cooperativas, a los indígenas, porque no ofrece ninguna garantía alternativa pues a nosotros seguir sobreviviendo como seres humanos.
Condemning us to death, us as Afro-Colombians, as cooperative workers, as indigenous people, because this FTA does not provide us with any guarantee that we will be able to survive.
Se ha tenido en cuenta nomás las multinacionales, el negocio, lo que es el etanol, todo lo que implica pues la ampliación de la importación de maquinarias para mecanizar el trabajo que venimos haciendo nosotros en este momento y desplazar misericordiamente sin ninguna responsabilidad social a la gente que en las industrias trabajamos.
¡Viva Colombia!
¡Viva!
¡Abajo Fidel!
We feel that this FTA really only favors multinationals, and it really promotes the production of ethanol. And in promoting that, it promotes the importation of machines that will replace us in our work. And this will displace us as workers and leave us with no option for labor.
Solicitamos al presidente Obama, al Senado de los Estados Unidos, que debe ser una condición la garantía de los pueblos indígenas, de los pueblos afrodescendientes que están siendo desplazados de su tierra, de la garantía de los trabajadores que estamos tercerizados sin ningún derecho.
We ask Obama to step up right now because we need guarantees. We need guarantees as Afro-Colombian people, as indigenous people, as outsourced people. It's time for Obama to step up.
Ese tratado, y si no, es un tratado inconveniente por la forma que se ha venido dando, inconsulto, asimétrico, que no se ha llamado a las personas que estamos involucrados en el problema, y por lo tanto nosotros creemos que es algo que se está haciendo pues a espaldas del pueblo, a espaldas de los trabajadores, y que por lo tanto es sentenciarnos a morir, y estamos totalmente en desacuerdo con el tratado que se va a firmar.
We need guarantees, and we need guarantees now. We haven't been consulted. We haven't been consulted as those that are most going to be affected by the FTA. This has been decided on and talked about behind closed doors without our voices. And this is something that will really sentence us to death. And so this is why we continue to stand against the free trade agreement between Colombia and the U.S.
A todos los que permitieron nuestro espacio aquí para socializar el problema, y esperamos que tenga en cuenta por parte del presidente Obama la población afrodescendiente que está en peligro, y que también él es afrodescendiente y que es su mismo pueblo, y por lo tanto estamos muy esperanzados en lo que pueda pasar y lo que las garantías que pueda darnos en lo que sigue.
I'd like to thank you all of you for coming out and have made this space possible. And I'd like to make one more call to Obama to stand up for what's right here. He needs to stand up for us as Afro-Colombian people. He himself is an African-American. He needs to stand up for us right now.
At the conclusion of the speeches, protesters marched towards the White House and dropped the 51 coffins on the street directly in front of the White House in the tourist zone. When the cops cleared the area demanding that everyone leave, 4 people refused and were eventually arrested. This is the classic civil disobedience template in front of the White House, where a protest occupies the so-called picture postcard area. And when the police clear it, some people refuse to leave and are arrested. These protesters are serious about stopping the U.S.-Colombia free trade area so long as trade unionists are being killed by right-wing paramilitaries.
Thank you, all of you.
The city, this is movement music.
Have you heard the news?
Walmart's coming.
Georgia Avenue, uptown, ain't that something?
Something.
Small businesses, shop owners, hearts pumping, cause they know their livelihoods is about to take a thumping.
Thumping.
See, you can't compete with a superstore who's an importer of slave laborers. Craftsmanship, low price to flip to undercut the market, hand over fist.
Walmart
is infamous for the way they behave. Low wage pay, treat the workers like slaves. Employees who try to unionize, soon find themselves in unemployment lines. The way they treat women needs improving. 1.6 million sisters are suing them for being paid less than the male equivalent. On these issues and more, we can't afford to be ignorant.
keep DC Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about chocolate city unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
This is the Funkinest Journalist with your three Walmart commandments. Step one, move in and crush competition by underselling. Step two, pay workers nothing and block unionization. Step three, take all that money, put it into the Walton Family Foundation, and turn that into political influence to protect yourself and make even more.
Walmart,
it's not a good fit for Chocolate City. Let me holla black at you with the skinny. Important that you clearly understand and remember, DC doesn't work with the right wing agenda. The Walton families are big contributors to bigoted representatives and senators. Trent Lott, sinister, Strom Thurmond, similar Confederate, state loving George Bush ministers. Overseer plantation mentality results in black and brown casualties. Statehood opposition for the district has been supported by Walmart's mischief. The D.C. Voting Rights Act was defeated, assisted via Walmart PACs, and now they want to come here to see their money stack. Stay up on the facts. Chocolate City, don't relax and fight back.
Keep D.C. Walmart free. It won't benefit you or me. They ain't about spreading love in the community. They ain't about Chocolate City unity. Opportunists stop to make a buck quick. Suck up all your resources and then they split. They try to come across as if they legit, but really their motives are counterfeit.
Keep DC Walmart free is an emerging activist group of DC residents stepping up to challenge the corporate big box invasion of Chocolate City. Walmart has plans to establish 4 stores in DC by 2012. Walmart's in DC will threaten small businesses, cause loss of more jobs than it will bring to the community, and lower the wage standards for all workers. To find out more and get involved, visit walmartfreedc.org.
In Montgomery County, Maryland, upscale developers in Silver Spring are complaining to the police about young people under 18 hanging out. Due to curfews in D.C. and PG County, and maybe police harassment at Gallery Place, Silver Spring has become one of the few places people under 18 or young-looking without ID documents can hang out without fear of arrest. Apparently, the wealthy owners of Silver Spring's fancy new buildings don't like that very much. Everyone wants to make sure they don't have teenagers, it seems. At the request of the police, county executive, and no doubt developers, Montgomery County Council Member Valerie Irvin, who represents Silver Spring, has introduced curfew legislation similar to DC's law, which DC cannot effectively enforce. Councilmember Mark Elrich, to his credit, is saying the idea needs further study, a way of blunting the momentum and putting it on the back burner. The complaints from business owners center on teens in general, yet they say this law is needed to prevent gangs from coming to Silver Spring in the future. This, in turn, means the real target of the law is young people of color, especially Montgomery County's Latino community. Out of fear of gangs that are not even going to Silver Spring, the police and developers want to see young people, and especially young people of color, swept off the streets by armed police in all of Montgomery County, even places 20 miles from Silver Spring. They've gone so far as to propose that Rockville and Gaithersburg, where the proposed county law could not apply, would have to pass curfews too, for fear of becoming curfew-free zones. What have we come to when rich suit and tie developers have the power to order police with guns to arrest or detain people simply for being under 18 and out at night? Don't they understand that just one negative encounter with the police is enough to turn many young people into permanent enemies of all law enforcement and all of the people who stand behind it? Don't they understand that the real gangs, including MS-13 and even a few jihadi groups,
recruit in the very prisons they send people to? In Iraq and Afghanistan, when people are treated as insurgents, many of them decide to become insurgents. That was how the resistance in occupied Iraq grew. It began with a few former members of the government attacking U.S. troops, especially after an incident involving a U.S. helicopter, a flag on a mosque, and police aggression against the crowd. Soon the attacks mushroomed, and the U.S. responded with a policing model of raiding people's homes. Many of those raided decided to become insurgents themselves, and within months, the war mushroomed. Less than a year later, those four Blackwater thugs were sprung from that famous bridge in Fallujah, and it was on! Godzilla! We now know why DC's pedicab operators are being harassed by U.S. Park Police. Tourmobile! A Washington Post story on July 5th said the crackdown, quote, came out of nowhere, and buried in the story was a report that Tourmobile is complaining about having any competition with their legal monopoly over tour bus and only tour bus operations on the mall. They are even complaining about taxi cab drivers, although no law prohibits taxis on the mall. The same Washington Post story reports that the only proposed regulations of pedicabs were defeated in D.C. Council, so there are no regulations for the U.S. Park Police to enforce, only Tourmobile's attempt to extend their monopoly on tour buses to all modes of transport on the mall. Tourmobile calls pedicabs unsafe, but years ago I saw a Tourmobile-style bus run by another company burn to the ground in less than a minute after an accident with their propane fuel system. Passengers were lucky to escape the flames. Who is Tourmobile, with similar buses, to whine about safety? Since the wave of publicity about the harassment, it has lessened a bit. I spoke to several pedicab operators off the record as they fear retaliation. They are now saying that park police, instead of writing tickets for violating regulations that have turned out not to exist, are trying to goad pedicab operators into fights. One said, quote, you have to keep a level head. What kind of police officers, instead of keeping the peace, go around trying to pick fights? Maybe a cop like this park police sergeant who responded to a telephone call seeking information with a torrent of abuse.
I think just have a better idea of what to expect and what to do to avoid any sort of prosecution will go a long way to alleviating a lot of the stress that's been felt amongst drivers, and I really appreciate you taking the time to help with that.
In case you couldn't hear that, the pedicab drivers said this, quote, I think just having a better idea of what to expect and what to do to avoid prosecution will go a long way to alleviating a lot of the stress that's being felt among drivers, and I really appreciate you taking the time to help with that stuff. Here's the park police sergeant's response, including the words Channel 9 News didn't have the guts to leave in the audio but printed on screen. Quote, if they call my officers assholes, it's going to come down on every single one of them out there, okay? Just to be given a heads up, say, look, you know, they may think asshole all they want, but as soon as they call the first one asshole, every pedicab driver out there is ultimately going to pay for that. You know what I'm saying? Those are ugly words from a so-called cop. If you don't like what you just heard, boycott Tourmobile. They're doing a safety dance, trying to use false claims about safety to snuff out competition for their ugly monopoly.
America's debate over oil dependence and climate change resurfaced as the Obama administration proposed new rules to increase mileage on cars and light trucks to over 56 miles a gallon by 2025. Predictably, the oil industry and its allies in Congress objected, maintaining that the new mileage requirement went too far and would hurt the industry by discouraging American consumers from buying new cars. White House climate advisor Heather Zischel praised the new rules proposed by the Environmental Protection Agency and the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration as a vital element in the broader framework of what we've been trying to do to make sure we have a healthy, robust domestic auto industry. According to the Washington Post, a number of top environmentalists were disappointed that Zischel failed to talk about the carbon reduction benefit in the new rules. Jonathan Lash of the World Resources Institute observed, "By excising climate change from its vocabulary, the president has surrendered a power that only he has to explain challenging issues." The Natural Resources Defense Council estimates consumers would save over $6,500 in fuel costs over the life of an average vehicle if the new mileage standard is approved.
On the 4th of July, protesters showed up at Lafayette Park for the annual march for marijuana legalization and medical marijuana, preparing to march in the mall where a concert is still being held despite the annual crop of checkpoints. It's a reference to medical marijuana, which is used in some cases for very serious illness indeed. Despite the mixing of medical marijuana and recreational use advocates in the march, the fact is that medical marijuana is a very serious issue. There are reports from the field of medical marijuana allowing people with chronic diseases that could have been spending the rest of their lives on morphine to get off of hard drugs and not have to go back to having pain so severe they can't get out of bed. Prohibiting people from having access to whatever pain-killing medication works is the same as torturing those people. Speaking of torture, in an extraordinarily ugly development, the U.S. Park Police arrested five people, including a 50-year-old woman who they beat up and tackled behind the stage, about 30 cops in all attacking the crowd at this post-smoking concert at about 8 p.m.
Let him go!
It's a major waste of taxpayer money!
What the fuck?
This brutality by the U.S. Park Police was not only in a tradition of a long string of attacks over the past 30 years on the cannabis marchers, it is also yet another incident of ugly violence by the U.S. Park Police this summer. I don't know what is going on with the United States Park Police. Arresting people for dancing at the Jefferson Memorial. Arresting reporter Pete Tucker for recording a public meeting of the Taxi Cab Commission in a U.S. Park Police base. Hassling and seeking to arrest pedicab operators for competing with Tourmobile. And now using brutal violence against a 50-year-old woman at the 4th of July post-marijuana legalization march concert. I don't know what the U.S. Park Police are smoking, but I'll guarantee you it's not marijuana.